You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell.
And we're so delighted that you're joining us, whether you're live with us on Facebook or YouTube, or you're going to be listening tomorrow on Podbean to the audio podcast or on LA Talk Radio's website. We're just happy you're along for the ride. Who opened the show? Who was that just then?
You mean the Hot Texas guys, you know?
The Hot Texas swing band always open and close the show. And so we know that we are on the air. This is live radio. Jim, who is our special guest tonight?
Special guest, Jim Overstreet.
There he is. Hi, Jim.
We got a couple
Hello.
Books.
Hello.
We got a couple books here, right?
We do. But first, Jim, tell us, where are you joining us from?
I'm just a little bit north of Big Timber, Montana.
Yes, and the home base of the two books we're talking about, A Montana Rivalry and A Montana Inheritance. These are the first two of a book series that Jim is writing called Rodeo in the Blood series.
Must be about rodeo.
And we are delighted to have you with us. Jim has a little introduction, and then we're going to get started.
Very good. Jim Overstreet. Jim is a lifelong cowboy and the author of A Montana Rivalry and A Montana Inheritance. These are the first two books of the Rodeo in the Blood series. Raising horses for most of his life, Jim has earned multiple titles in tie-down roping, from youth rodeo to the senior circuit. An accomplished writer, his work has been published in national magazines, which include Reader's Digest, Persimmon Hill, and numerous equine magazines, especially Western Horsemen. Jim is passionate about telling stories about the contemporary West that demonstrate the physical and mental toughness that are the social norms in ranching and rodeo. Welcome, Jim.
We really enjoyed reading these books, Jim, and I think you're talking about wanting to include mental toughness, physical toughness, just all of what goes on in your books is absolutely true. You nail it.
Thank you.
You gotta be tough to live in the world of these characters, don't you?
You do.
Yeah, you do. So, Jim, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself, maybe something we didn't cover in the bio?
Well, I grew up on a ranch. I raised horses all my life. My dad raised horses, and it just seemed natural that I did. I had a stallion and mares, and until just recently, the last couple of years, I haven't had any colts, but that's kind of been the passion in my life has been horses. And I worked in a bank, a small country bank here in Montana for 37 years to support my horse habit.
I guess that's horses in the blood. One of the things that when we were chatting the other day, you talked a little bit about cowboy after World War II. And I wondered if you'd like to just hit on that a little bit.
Well, I'm a baby boomer. I was born in 49. My dad had been in World War II, and he was a cowboy. And so after during that period after the war, for quite a while, the West, at least in our level, wasn't very prosperous. And not that I knew it, but we lived in remote places a lot, sometimes with no power, no electricity, heating with wood stoves, sometimes no telephone. Once we lived for several months, and when I was about, I think I was two, we lived in a kind of a sheep herder shack that wasn't tall enough for my dad to stand up in. Oh. There was no running water, no bathroom, no electricity. My dad hauled water from a creek about 3 miles away. So I thought it was great. I mean, I was just a kid. I didn't know any better.
Yeah. Yeah, they call that living off the grid now, I think.
I think so. Well, it didn't last too awful long, and we always had plenty to eat and a good place to live, usually. Yeah. I mean, with that one exception, it's pretty minor.
Yeah.
When did you get into rodeo? How young were you when you first started?
The first kids rodeo I went to was probably 6 or 7 years old. And then in Ennis, Montana, where I grew up, they had some youth rodeos for several years. And I don't know. I think I won my first belt buckle when I was maybe 11, maybe 10. And then several more before that was all over. And then it just, my dad roped mostly for fun or for work. And he got me started roping at an early age, me and my brother. And it just seemed natural to do it. We practiced most nights during the summer at an arena near on the ranch where I grew up. And I don't know. I won my first tie down roping when I was 16 in Island Park, Idaho, against adults. My dad also won a little money that day team roping. So it was about, I don't know, 40, 50 miles home. And it was a pretty short drive. We were feeling pretty good.
I'm sure.
Now, for those of us that don't know, real briefly, can you tell us what is tied down roping? What is that skill?
Well, it's in a rodeo, they put a calf in the chute, usually somewhere in that 200 to 300 pound range. A lot of times 200 to 250 range. And you chase it down there on your horse, rope it, and then you get off and throw it down and tie it up. And the time stops when you finish your tie.
Okay.
You know, I've seen that done, and I don't remember. Do you tie all four legs? Is that a three-leg tie? I can't remember.
It's a three-leg tie.
Okay.
They can't get up if they, you know, there's no chance.
actually, if they get up, you're disqualified. And there's a, once you get back on your horse, you have to ride ahead and slack the rope. And there's a 6 second time period after you're on your horse and slack the rope that they have to stay tied.
So you have to get back up on the horse. Okay.
And it takes a little while, you know, to get off the calf and get back on your horse.
Sure.
So anyway, I don't know. Sometimes a calf will stay tied for a long time. Sometimes they get up.
The first book in the series, Montana Rivalry, you introduce us to a cast of characters. You also introduce us to a number of rodeo events. And just like you just described the one that you used to compete in, could you do the same thing briefly for, let's see, steer wrestling, bronc riding? It can be in any order you want, Jim. It's okay. Well, and team roping or barrel racing.
Okay. Seeing that my main characters are steer wrestlers, I'll talk about that first. In steer wrestling, you have a horned steer. They usually weigh 450 to maybe 600 pounds. It depends. And the steer wrestler has a helper that hazes the steer up, keeps him from ducking away, so that the steer wrestler asks for this the steer to leave the chute, and then he chases after him, gets up beside him, and jumps off and grabs him by the horns and throws him down.
Fast.
Sometimes it's anyway.
It sounds like a lot. I think it's a lot tougher than the way you describe it, though.
Yeah.
Well, when probably some of those horses when they're running by the steer going over 30 miles an hour. So
that's fast.
Yeah, and it's physically demanding. Yeah. Most of the steer wrestlers are big guys, 200 pounds or more. My hero, one of my heroes in the story is 6'4 and weighs 240. The other one is 5'10 and weighs 190. But the little one is pretty darn competitive. So.
He sure is, Rusty. He sure is. Well, and the way that Jim writes the description of the events, you reader, if you've never experienced rodeo firsthand in actually riding or being involved in an activity, or you've attended, or maybe you've watched on the Cowboy Channel or whatever, you will feel that you are right there doing it. I was exhausted after every, and because we go to many rodeos, I feel like, oh, I got better every time. Like, okay, I know what's coming. He didn't get the hazy. Oh, the timing, the horse went too fast. The steer went too slow. The steer went too fast. The hazer wasn't quite right. And so it's really fun because we get very knowledgeable. And again, we like to read fiction that teaches us also. And you do that wonderfully in this book. So that was steer wrestling. Okay, so now, Jim,
before we move on now, does it take a long time to teach your horse to be
good
to be good in sync within the steer wrestling?
You know, the steer wrestling it doesn't take quite as long on that. For them to get really dependable, they're usually been used for several years. Calf roping is a lot more involved because the horse has to actually hold the rope tight and pull on the rope. So that's a lot more involved.
Okay.
Steer wrestling, the horse just has to stand in the box long enough to let everything get right and then run.
All right. So bronc riding.
There are two kinds of bronc riding in rodeo. One of them is bareback riding, and they get in a chute with a horse, I've heard announcers describe it as hang on to a suitcase handle and ride the bronc. And then there's saddle bronc riding, where you actually have a saddle and there's a halter on the horse, and you have a rein, in both of them the timing of your ride and the spurring of your ride is ultra important. And in the scoring, those are scored events rather than timed. And so the horse gets 50% of the score and the rider gets the other 50%. So if you draw a really tough horse, you get a higher score if you ride it. Mm-hmm. If you buck off, the rides last 8 seconds and after they're out of the chute, and then sometimes that seems like a lot longer than that, I think.
Yeah. It's all relative.
And of course, our main character, Rusty, he starts out doing saddle bronc riding, and his dad had been, I think that was his dad's best event. But Rusty gets a little not bored exactly, but boy, that steer wrestling that's his thing, right?
Yeah, to start with, he really wasn't interested in it until he saw Warren do it.
His rival.
That's what we thought. Yeah.
If he can do it, I can do it. And he didn't think because Warren was half again as big as him that he would have an advantage, but. But Rusty's one of those people that likes a challenge, and he lifted weights and did what he needed to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're right. The rivalry, this book, Montana Rivalry, it's all about rivalry. And, I was thinking about it last night, Jim, and I thought, We have rivalry, yes, and we'll talk about it in greater detail shortly, but we have rivalry between, you know, Rusty and Warren and some of the other characters, but we have rivalry with the animals that are competing in the rodeo. I mean, we have conflict. We have conflict on every page in this book, and some of it is between, you know, the contestant and the animal.
Yes. And some of the ranch scenes, you see a little bit of the same thing, because the cows and horses don't necessarily want to do what you want them to do.
Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. true.
Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of barrel racing, because we have a couple of ladies that barrel race. And I think most of us probably have an image of barrel racing. But do you want to just give us a little bit about barrel racing?
Sure. In barrel racing, it's an event for in rodeo, it's an event for women. In some jackpots and things, men can compete in it as well against the women. But there are three barrels set up in kind of a triangle shape, and the contestants race the horses. They circle each barrel. They make a cloverleaf pattern, and whoever does it the fastest wins. And if you knock over a barrel, there's a 5-second penalty. Ruby, who is Rusty's sister, is a very competitive barrel racer. So that's why it's important in this story.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We got to have women competing, too. This can't be this can't be an all-male book.
It can't.
Yeah. Yeah, but there are some scenes in these books where Ruby is a hazer in this professional steer wrestling. And I don't know that I've seen women do it in amateur rodeo. I haven't seen them do it in professional rodeo. There's no reason they couldn't.
Mm-hmm. You have a question. Go on.
Well, yeah, just a half a minute here on the circuit. It appears that, you know, it's a pretty organized program when it comes to rodeo competition. It must start out, I don't know whether it starts out in January and goes to December, or I know we have the national finals in December, so I'm thinking maybe that's the tail end of the event.
That's right. The Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association has most of the rodeos in my books, and the season starts in actually, the way they have it now, the season overlaps a little bit, and the points that they win that allow them to go to the national finals stop on September 30th. And then there are a few fall rodeos, like the Nile and Billings and some other ones that count toward the following year. And then the finals is in December is for that in for that year that it's a, I don't know if it's finance, you'd call it a fiscal year, but it's, mm-hmm. it's the, I'm so the, there really is a very brief off season, if there is any in professional rodeo. Mm-hmm. Some of the other rodeos I had some college rodeos and I talked about high school rodeos and some of it, those are separate organizations that do that. Mm-hmm. And there are amateur rodeos. And other places as well. I mean, I call them amateur rodeos, but they're not professional rodeo association sanctioned, but they're often sanctioned by a smaller organization.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a lot of colleges that actually have rodeo teams and rodeo coaches. Yeah, I wasn't familiar. I think I was familiar with rodeo teams, but then with the concept of a coach, and I said, well, of course.
I can't begin to tell you all of them, because there's lots of them in Texas. A lot of the smaller colleges and even junior colleges have them. They belong to the National Intercollegiate Rodeo Association, and they have their finals. They have the rodeos in the fall and the spring. They have two seasons that add together, and they have their finals in June. And for the last several years, it's been in Casper, Wyoming. For a while, when in the 60s and 70s, it was in Bozeman, Montana, at Montana State University.
So we want to just talk just for another moment about the book, about the series. We're going to take a very short break right after that, and then we're going to be in depth about the books and the characters. You call the series Rodeo in the Blood. And we read the first two. When you wrote the first one, A Montana Rivalry, did you already envision, Jim, that this would be a series? And how many books, if you did envision it, how many books did you have in mind?
You know, when I first started writing, I had no idea it would be a series. But when I got into it, I decided that I could probably make, you know, make three books. But as I got going, I like my characters. They lead interesting lives. And I'm actually working on the fifth one right now.
Ah, okay. Oh, wow. Well, and the time, we do call it a contemporary Western, very contemporary. What's the time frame, at least for the first two, or even where you're going with the series? What's the span of time?
The first one started in the 1990s, and it goes through, I think, 2019. Mm-hmm. And then the second one, Rodeo Montana Inheritance, mm-hmm. starts immediately when the other one ends at the National Finals in 2019, and it goes until midsummer. And then the other ones are months so far. So, I mean, 6 months or three to 6 months in the other books. The first one was... You know, I had to introduce a lot of stuff, and I started those telling about those kids' lives when they were young, so you'd kind of know where they were, why when they got where they were going, you kind of knew why.
Yes, yes, and I was very happy that I had book two when I ended book one, because you leave us with quite a cliffhanger at the last page of book one, and then book two opens the same day. Like this, you know, it just picks up right where we left off. So that was great fun. The I did wonder when I was reading book one and I was looking at the dates and all, and I thought, as we go into book two, I think we're going to hit 2020. I wonder if he'll include COVID. And you did. Subtly. Yes. It's there. You don't ignore it. And I wondered, when you were writing book two, was COVID happening, or had what was going on when you were writing book two?
I'm trying to remember when I wrote book two. I finished. I think COVID had already happened when I wrote it. I may have started it before COVID became it, but it became such a big deal. It had to go in there with those dates.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I always worry about putting dates on things, but there's so much stuff that's dependent on, there's so many things that change. You need dates to kind of get some, I mean, cell phones and cell things phones, like that.
GPS and how they find their way around and, you know, yes.
It changed our world very quickly. And so if it's before cell phones, I want my readers to know that.
Right. Right. We are going to take a very short break, and we are going to let everybody know one of the places that your books is available, both of the books currently, and they're available both hardcover and paperback, actually. And take a look. This is our Out West Shop affiliate bookshop ad, and stay right where you are. And when we come back, we'll be talking about Rusty and Warren. Stay tuned. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest, Jim Overstreet. And we got a couple of books here. We're talking about Montana Rivalry and Montana Inheritance.
And you want them both. You got to get them both at the same time, because you don't want to wait. You don't want to wait. When book one is done, you want to move right into book two. Yeah.
Yeah. They're good books. They're good reads. Speaking of the first one, and we're talking about the title, Rivalry, what's that rivalry all about? Who are the characters involved in this?
Yeah, how did it start, Jim?
Well, you know, I started this book in the 90s, so long ago that I don't remember where the idea came from. But the real start of the rivalry is when they're both 7 years old. They've skipped school to go to the Westmont Ranch branding. Warren is the son of the owner, so he expects to be there. And they have kind of a roller coaster day because Warren starts insulting him when he's first there because he's small. And then after Warren falls off the calf, he decides he wants to ride. And then Rusty makes a spectacular ride. Warren decides that Rusty's his new best friend. Mm-hmm. And then at lunch, Warren's dad takes him out behind the house and chews him out, says, "We don't let the help show us up." And so Warren, you can imagine how Warren feels about that. The friendship is gone. Yeah. And in a little later, Rusty's in the barn on his horse, and then he gets off. He's starting to leave, and Rusty comes in the barn and is going to teach Rusty a lesson, or that he can't, you know, he shouldn't show him up. And Rusty makes a lucky kick, and Warren goes to the house in tears. Yeah. And that's the start of the rivalry.
Yeah. You know, I couldn't help but wonder, even as I was reading it, and I could see, okay, this is where it starts. You know, if they hadn't had that conversation, Rusty and Warren just could have been the best of friends. You know, there might have been competition, you know, friends can have competition amongst each other, but as we see Rusty with Casey and David, and, you know, we see a healthy, friendly, you know, competition. And the book maybe wouldn't have had a book.
I suspect that. But I can't think of one in particular, but I've known plenty of fathers and mothers that would do something like that to their kid. And it's a wonder that there aren't a lot more. There probably are more rivalries. I mean, it's sort of, with the parents he had, it's lucky that Warren didn't grow up crazier than he was.
That's probably true.
Do you want to ask about some of the other characters from that book?
Well, we obviously see that Warren's father is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Most likely a problem clear down to the story, but we won't get too much into that. But talk to us about Chip. That's Rusty's father, right?
Yeah, Rusty's dad. Yeah.
What's he like?
Rusty's dad, Chip, is a perfectly nice fellow. Not too much push. He's kind of a footloose sort of guy. I think he switched his job several times when Rusty's growing up and sort of drags Rusty's mother along. And then finally he has a problem with one of the ranch owners that he's working for near Dillon. And they move back to White Sulphur because Edith's mother has died, and so they have a house to move to. And then when Chip finds a job with Southwest Rodeo Company and wants to go and goes to New Mexico, Edith stays home. She won't go. She doesn't want her kids to have to change schools every little bit any more than they have. So Chip's not a bad father, but he's a distant father, and he only comes home a couple times a year and in that first book. But when he does, he gives Rusty saddle bronc riding lessons, and he shows up with two nice horses, young horses, that he gives to Ruby and Rusty. And that's a big part of the story as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really a good guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
They all get along. Yeah. They kind of have learned how to roll with the situation. You
know? We have somebody else, which was really a pivotal character in the story, Harlan.
Harlan.
Harlan may be my favorite character in the story. He's an older man. During the branding when they have their first fight, he's actually watching through the window. At that time, I think he's 50 something, and he's got a broken leg because he's been to some senior rodeos and as a steer wrestler and broke his leg. And then because he saw the fight, he arranged to take Rusty to Livingston and get boxing lessons. And he didn't tell Rusty this was the reason, but he's afraid that the big kid is going to beat him up. And so it turns out Rusty is very athletic. Even though he's small, he's very athletic and packs a punch. In one of the later books, I think I actually have him in front of Casey. A fly is buzzing around, and he just reaches out his fingers and catches him in the air. I've heard of people that could do that.
Can do that.
Not many of them. I'm not one. But he had that sort of, he's small, but he's got that sort of special athletic ability.
Yeah. Harlan is a little like the creamy center of an Oreo cookie. He keeps the two hard-edged, keeps them apart. And yet everybody respects that. You know, the guys, Warren and Rusty, both absolutely adore him, as do some of the other characters. And he's able to not play favorites, and everybody wants to not impress him, but they love him so much that they want to do right by him and do the best for him. And they know when they have a problem, he's the guy to call. He'll figure out, you know, how to keep it all running.
Yeah, he's a great negotiator. Yeah. He's a great leader.
Yeah.
You know, but I get the feeling we don't necessarily see it, but I feel that he is probably the toughest guy in the whole book.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he is tough because I think it's in the I can't remember which book it's in, but one of the next ones, he has a horse fall over on him and break his hip.
We'd have something happen.
And he ends up, I mean, he's just very stoic and tough when he needs to be. But that sort of, I mean, that's part of that culture that he's part of, but he's a very good example of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We have a woman that gets in the mix, a woman and a ranch in a way, that get in the mix. Tell us a little bit about Jenny.
Well, Jenny starts out sort of innocently but we see one scene where she decides that she's going to marry a cowboy and she wants one with a ranch. And then later she had actually met Rusty at an amateur rodeo. But when she really kind of takes up with him, he's sitting in the student union at college right after college has started, feeling really lost. And she sits down beside him, helps him with his math homework, and they end up having a very strong and long relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when it gets right down to it, she told him that she couldn't be like his mother. She couldn't stay home and raise the kids while he's off on the rodeo trail. And so they break up, and within months, she marries Warren, who has a big ranch.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and I've had women here.
They're pretty young. I mean, they're in their early 20s. I think at one point, Rusty's 26. And we already feel like he'd be older because we've been following his life and we've been with him a long time. But you kind of go like, 26, I really wanted to say to Jenny, just give him a chance. Just let him go. Just let him go. Build a life for yourself. Finish school. You know, this is 2019. You can have a, you know, you lady, you can have a life of your own. encourage him, you know, go let him do his thing. But no, she's
impatient.
She's impatient.
Jenny's problem is that her dad deserted her father deserted her when she was pretty young. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't have a lot of built-in trust for men. And the only, we don't meet him, but we know she has an uncle that she who has a small ranch and that who that she helps out and falls in love with ranching.
Yeah, she does love ranching. Yes, she absolutely does. Passion for ranching. Okay, there's another woman who's a very interesting character. We don't want spoiler alerts here, but tell us about Vera.
Vera is Warren's mother, and she's descended from a long line of people who built up that ranch. And so I think it started in the 1870s, and it's quite a big place as she's growing up, and she feels like she's, well, at least she acts like she is aristocracy, at least in that area, you know, around Walker, Montana and Mount Montana in general. But her father was kind of a spendthrift, and he had the ranch in a lot of financial trouble. And the man that Vera married, Warren's father, came from money back east, and he put a lot of money into the ranch. And so they ended up changing the ownership to where Warren's father owned 60%, his mother owned 30%, and Warren owned 10%. So Vera still feels, even in the interaction she has with her husband, she feels like he's not treating her good enough because she's somebody important.
He's important.
And so there's a lot of, that's part of the conflict as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that was one thing that was very enjoyable as a reader is that we have a lot of characters that are all from different backgrounds, all working in the same community or in the same kind of environment, the ranch environment, the rodeo environment. And it introduces us to a world that many of us wouldn't be that familiar with, but we feel very comfortable in that world the way you set it up and you guide us through it. And I could certainly understand the scenes between Vera and her husband, Robert, are, this just needs this is a TV series. This is a series. There are so many scenes that you could just lift. And I was keeping a list of them, but I didn't bring it here to the microphone with me, but there were so many great scenes. You know, there's a character Buckshot that you introduce in the second book. And there's that scene where there's a cow delivering, I don't know the right proper terms, but Arnie is there and is going to get killed by that situation. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you could just see that on the screen. And I was holding my breath, like, what's going to happen? And then Buckshot shows up. She's great. Buckshot's wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, she turns out saving the day. But you have just this book, these books are just littered with fabulous individual scenes that are so engaging that we just keep turning the pages. It's just really wonderful, Jim. It's really wonderful.
Thank you. That's really nice to hear that.
Yeah. Hey, a lot of fun. Oh, wait, we have a question.
Oh, for Jim or for me?
For you, really. You know, how does somebody get on the show?
Well, if you're watching the show or listening to the show and you think to yourself, I want to sit in Jim Overstreet's chair, I want to be on the show, just reach out with an email to Bobby Jean Bell, BobbyJeanBell @gmail.com and say, hey, how do I get on the show? And we'll open up a little bit of dialogue, figure out what have you got and what have we got and is there a time and a place? And and it's always really fun. We love having that conversation with people that are interested in being on the show. And you can be an author, a blogger, a journalist. You can be a songwriter, a poet. You may be our publicist, a publisher. We'd love to open dialogue with you. So that's all you have to do.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was easy, right, Jim? Yeah. We will say that Mutual Friends Blue Cottage Agency did open the door, open the gate, getting us introduced to Jim. And oftentimes we will hear from a publicist or a publishing company or an agent or folks like the folks at Blue Cottage Agency. And we love working that way, too. That's another great way that we find our guests. I'm looking at time. Oh, my goodness, Jim, we are moving along here. Okay. Yeah. So in the second book, In Inheritance, we begin to see a change with Warren in book one. And right. I would say of the characters, and you are his creator. You breathe life into him. And we do begin to see him go through a really terrific character arc. And I couldn't help but wonder to myself, was Warren telling you, no, don't write me like that anymore. I don't want to be that angry guy anymore. I don't want to be, you know, unable to handle my beer anymore. I want to be, you know.
You know, I don't think Warren talked to me exactly that way. better person than he was. I mean, he learned everything the hard way.
Yeah, he did.
He kind of came through the hard knocks on his own. And then when he got associated with Corrine, several times people remarked that they thought Corrine was a good influence on him.
Yeah.
And Corrine, just for the listeners, Corrine is another one of Rusty's sisters.
Yeah, we're very tightly woven. That's why it's perfect for a TV series.
It kind of is. You know, I don't know. I didn't think about that, but I'm open to it, you know.
Yeah. I would think, yes. You know, I want to back up a minute. I don't know, you know, if we asked this question already, but Ken, what was the inspiration that got us going here in the first?
To move into Inheritance?
Move into Inheritance.
The books, yeah, yeah.
Well, both of them. You know, I started... After I started reading, I started as a pretty young age, and I read a lot, and I started thinking about writing books, and life got in the way, and for a long time I didn't have much to say, and then when we got computers and word processing programs, and it made just physically possible for me to do it, and I started writing. I wrote a few short stories. I don't think any of them got published, but I sold a bunch of magazine articles, a lot to Western Horseman, things like that. And that kind of got me going. But I liked the fiction. And I actually wrote a couple other books that didn't get published that were set in the West, more or less mystery stories, or at least suspense stories. And then whatever triggered this idea here, I decided I want to write it. And I actually started in the 90s. It took me somewhere between 25 and 30 years to finish it. But when I started, I had the idea. I think one of the first scenes I wrote was the branding scene where they have the conflict. And then after that, I got really busy. My kids were became teenagers, or where they were involved in a lot of school stuff, a lot of athletics. One of my daughters was very active in basketball. The other one was ended up a state champion in high school rodeo. And so, and my also my job that was supporting all my bad habits was taking a lot more time. And so I would just write a scene as it kind of came to me. And so I just kept accumulating them. That's how I came up with the dates and places on them, so I could get them in order eventually.
Yeah.
And when I got my first hip replacement in the fall of 2018, I think it was, I had to stay in the house. The doctor told me, don't do anything but walk around your house for 6 weeks. So I just sat down and really got into the story. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't finish it until the middle of the next summer, but and when I finished it, I left that little cliffhanger there, and I had to go on.
Yeah, you did.
I really haven't quit writing on the series the whole time.
Yeah, the I just want to comment that your dialogue is really well done, and so much information is delivered through really good dialogue, whether it's coaching on one of the, you know, one of the rodeo activities, or it's working through a problem of some kind. The characters, you just really have a knack of them being able to talk to each other and help us also, if they're teaching each other something, that we're also learning it at the same time. And I don't know that I have, it's just a wonderful skill, I think, Jim, that you have as an author, again, just as readers, just sharing, you know, sharing that. I am really looking, I'm really looking at time now. So Jim, before we get cut off, where can people find you? Tell us a like website and all that kind of good stuff.
My website is jimoverstreet.com. My books are available, some of them locally around here in various stores, but most they're available on Amazon. I think you can get them in from Barnes & Noble. Doesn't stock them in the stores, but you can order them through there. I think Goodreads. And then I think there are several other places you can order books that will have
them. Yes. So we're talking about tonight, a Montana rivalry, a Montana inheritance. Three more books in the chute coming our way. The Blood Rodeo in the Blood series. Do you want to ask him the one character question you always love to ask?
These characters ever surprise you at any time?
You know, they kind of do. I mean, from where I started, you know, I think they grow and become more complex, and I don't start off planning that. It's just when I'm writing and I start thinking what would happen next, and or what would they do, that they do surprise me. I mean, I wouldn't have started it that way, but they, I'm happy to go with it when I like my
characters. Yeah, and the characters that they continue in the next book, there is a lot of development that goes on with these characters in book two. Some that I wasn't so crazy about in book one is like, oh, okay.
They're a little better?
All right. I'm with you on that.
You give them another chance.
Jim, you have a quote or two to share.
We have a couple quotes. Yeah, we do.
All right.
We always like to read a couple quotes, and we like to take at least one of them from the book itself, and then maybe one from the outside someplace that kind of relates to the story we're talking about. And this is from a Montana rivalry, and we get our number one character, Rusty, and he's talking. Rusty Blackstone is talking with his friends and fellow steer wrestling competitors, Casey and Nick. Rusty says, odds are that you'll get some money in either the go round or the finals or the average. Easy for you to say, Nick said. You've already won a nice check. And Rusty replied, you got to be optimistic to make it in this game.
Mm-hmm. And he is optimistic. What else you got?
Yeah, and this one's from the famous Wayne Frost. Go after what you want to do and what you want to be, but don't be afraid to be willing to pay the price.
Lane Frost. Well, it's been wonderful to have you with us tonight, Jim. I'm going to take a moment and just introduce next week our guest. We will be reading two espionage thrillers, a little change in reading material, The Underhanded by Adam Sykes. It is his newest book. It was just released just a month or so ago. And his first book, Landslide, a novel. So join us next week as we talk about all kinds of espionage and spy stuff. And let's see, we want to say a thank you to everybody that was with us. Thank you so much, Jim, for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you to Sam Houston and LA Talk Radio and the Hot Texas Swing Band. And thank you for all of you that have come along joining us tonight or down the road. We sure appreciate traveling along with us. And what else we got?
A parting remark. It's always a great day out west.
Keep writing and we'll keep reading. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.